David Byrd in Washington. President Donald Trump asked Congress to give him $5.7 billion to build a border wall with Mexico, but stopped short of declaring a national emergency to get the money. In a nationally televised speech from the Oval Office, Trump said the border wall is needed to guarantee security and to end what he called a humanitarian crisis.
This barrier is absolutely critical to border security. It's also what our professionals at the border want and need. This is just common sense.
Trump's speech came 18 days into a partial government shutdown with 800,000 federal workers either furloughed or working without pay. In the Democratic response, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi said the president should reopen the government and then negotiate border security.
And the fact is, President Trump must stop holding the American people hostage, must stop manufacturing a crisis, and must reopen the government.
Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer said American citizens should not be used as bargaining chips.
The symbol of America should be the Statue of Liberty, not a 30-foot wall. So our suggestion is a simple one. Mr. President, reopen the government, and we can work to resolve our differences over border security.
The president plans to visit the border on Thursday. A Russian lawyer who has worked with Donald Trump Jr. in the presidential campaign has been indicted in New York. AP correspondent Warren Levinson has details.
Natalia Veselnitskaya is the Russian lawyer who arranged the now infamous Trump Tower campaign meeting with Donald Trump Jr. and Jared Kushner, claiming to have dirt on Hillary Clinton. She's accused of misleading investigators in a 2013 Russian money laundering scheme involving New York real estate.
Warren Levinson of AP. For more, visit our website. This is VOA News. A court filing shows that former Trump campaign chairman Paul Manafort lied about sharing polling data with a Russian contact. AP's Ed Donahue has details.
The information was accidentally revealed in a defense lawyer filing that was meant to be redacted. The AP reviewed the material because it wasn't properly blacked out. It says Manafort shared polling data during the 2016 presidential campaign with an associate accused of having ties to Russian intelligence and lied to federal investigators about it. The filing does not say if the polling information was public or what was done with it. Prosecutors say Manafort's lies went against their plea agreement. He pleaded guilty in September. The filing revealed the first extensive details of what Manafort lied about. Ed Donahue, Washington.
U.S. National Security Advisor John Bolton's visit to Ankara ended in acrimony Tuesday when Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan refused to meet him and dismissed Bolton's calls for protection of the YPG Syrian Kurdish militia. Reuters correspondent Emily Wither reports.
The Kurdish YPG were a backbone of American efforts there, but also a group that Turkey views as terrorists. And John Bolton, the White House security advisor in Ankara Tuesday, said that not only would the Kurds need protection, but that Turkey would also need to coordinate any military action with the U.S. Turkey said no to both those conditions. Turkey says there'll be no slowdown in the U.S. withdrawal. Ankara is now focused on what would happen to American bases and the weapons given to Kurdish fighters. It appears if they want Turkey's help, they'll have to turn their back on their closest Syrian ally.
Emily Wither of Reuters. U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo was in Jordan Tuesday on the first stop of a Middle East visit that will include stops in Cairo and several Gulf states. Edward Uranian reports.
In a news conference with Jordanian Foreign Minister Ayman Safadi, Pompeo insisted the United States has not changed its longstanding policies despite President Donald Trump's decision to withdraw from Syria.
This is not just about a particular tactic that we take amongst the coalition. This is about a combined understanding that the most significant threat to the region is Daesh and the Islamist Revolution and their revolutionary efforts in the region.
Secretary Pompeo will visit Egypt, Bahrain, Qatar, the UAE, Oman, and Kuwait during his trip. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
A positive day on Wall Street Tuesday with all three major indices up. The Dow Jones Industrial Average rose 1.09%. The S&P 500 was up 0.97%. The NASDAQ was up 1.08%. For more, visit our website. I'm David Byrd. VOA News.
Morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butt in Washington. Today's Wednesday, January 9th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. A deadlock continues in the European Union over how to distribute rescue migrants.
49 migrants rescued by two German humanitarian vessels, the Sea Watch and Sea Eye, continue to be stationed off the coast of the southern Mediterranean island of Malta, waiting to know what their fate will be.
That's correspondent Sabina Castelfranco in Rome, Italy. A global campaign urges people to run, walk, or cycle in refugees' shoes. Burundi's government urges students aged 16 and above to contribute to fund the next year's election. And Sierra Leone's Anti-Corruption Commission vows to make corruption an expensive and risky enterprise in 2019.
We are going to increase the price of corruption for those who wish to engage in it. We are going to make sure that he who engages in corruption either goes to prison or becomes bankrupt.
Francis Ben Kaifala is the head of Sierra Leone's Anti-Corruption Commission. Nigerian labor unions protest to demand better minimum wage. And campaigners seek to end Malawi's Sex in Girls initiation ceremony. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley's Sports and our Listener of the Day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Humanitarian organization says migrants are being held hostage at sea because European countries are unable to agree how those rescued at sea should be relocated. The latest crisis involves migrants rescued by two German vessels. Sabina Castelfranco reports from Rome.
49 migrants rescued by two German humanitarian vessels, the Sea Watch and Sea Eye, continue to be stationed off the coast of the southern Mediterranean island of Malta, waiting to know what their fate will be. The Sea Watch rescued 32 migrants from a smuggler's boat on December 22nd. 17 others were saved by the Sea Eye on December 29th. On board there is one baby and a number of children. Both vessels have asked Malta and Italy to allow them to disembark, but both countries have refused, saying the European Union must intervene. Non-governmental organization officials are concerned about the psychological state of those on board, with some migrants refusing to eat. Some have been vomiting due to weather conditions. Supplies on board are also limited, and water is being rationed. Philippe Hahn heads operations for Sea Watch.
Eins ist allerdings allen gemein, und zwar, dass sie alle ihr Möglichstes tun.
He says the rescued have one thing in common. They're doing everything they can to flee the hell of Libya, and they risk anything to do so. Pope Francis has called for countries to show solidarity with migrants, but Malta says it already allowed 200 migrants to disembark last week and cannot do any more at the moment. Italian Interior Minister Matteo Salvini says Italy has done enough and it will not allow a single migrant to come off boats on its coastline this year. League Party member Massimiliano Romeo summed up the Italian government's position.
La posizione della Lega è chiara: fermare le navi per fermare I morti.
The League's position is clear: stop the boats to stop the dead, and therefore stop the trafficking of human beings, he said, adding, Italy has done its share, and other EU nations need to do their part. Speaking Tuesday in Berlin, Sea Watch's Alina Kroberg called the current situation a European failure. As negotiations continue, the effort to break the diplomatic deadlock among EU member states over how to relocate migrants.
Wir brauchen eine Entscheidung, die nachhaltig ist und wo die europäischen Staaten sich einigen.
She says a lasting policy decision is needed by European countries about where these people should be taken and how to distribute them, even before they are on shore. More than 200 Italian-based humanitarian organizations have appealed for the immediate disembarkation of migrants. Sabina Castelfranco for VOA News, Rome.
A new global campaign aims to sensitize the world to the plight of refugees by urging people to step into their shoes and clock the number of kilometers refugees need to run to reach safety. Lisa Schlein reports from the launch of the campaign at UN Refugee Headquarters in Geneva.
The campaign wants people to get out of their comfort zone and see what it feels like to be a refugee. It is calling on them to cover the distance traveled by refugees fleeing for their lives every year. The UN Refugee Agency estimates refugees travel 2 billion kilometers every year to reach the first point of safety. UNHCR spokesman Baba Balash tells VOA the campaign encourages people to run, walk, or cycle to achieve a similar cumulative total. He says participants can use their fitness apps or the campaign website to log the kilometers and contribute to a global total.
The whole idea is to bring back solidarity to the refugee cause. So this is a contribution, and also walking, running, cycling, they're all healthy activities. But refugees don't do it for fun. They do it when they have to leave or run away from a situation of danger.
Balash notes it takes a Syrian refugee 240 kilometers to reach Turkey. South Sudanese refugees, he says, have to travel more than 640 kilometers to reach Kenya. And Rohingya refugees in Myanmar have to cover about 80 kilometers to reach safety in Bangladesh. The UNHCR is calling on people in 27 countries across Africa, Asia, Central and North America, Europe, and the Middle East to take part in the campaign. It says participants can seek sponsorship to raise funds for the refugee cause. The agency says it hopes to raise more than $15 million. This will support registration and reception services for refugees, as well as providing food and water, shelter, and other basic aid. The UNHCR reports a record 68.5 million people are forcibly displaced worldwide, including 25.4 million refugees. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The chair of Sierra Leone's Anti-Corruption Commission says corruption in Sierra Leone will be a more expensive and risky enterprise in 2019. Francis Ben Kaifala says his commission will strengthen the laws to ensure that those who wish to engage in corruption will either go to prison or become bankrupt. Kaifala's commission, established since June last year, this month turned over to President Julius Maada Bio a check for over 7.5 billion leones, or $876,000 as part of monies recovered from corrupt officials. Though opposition All People's Congress APC party has accused President Bio of tribalism and selective justice in pursuit of former public officials alleged to have misappropriated public funds. Kaifala said his commission intends to carry out President Bio's mandate fairly and fearlessly.
As you can recall, I took office sometime in June 2018, and when I came in, the mandate was clear that we were drawing a line on corruption in Sierra Leone, and we were going to put together efforts by the citizens, the president, and all of us to change the story of this country. Most importantly, to try to deepen recovery. In that regard, within the last 6 months, we were able to collect 8.4 billion leones, which is very close to $1 million. Funds that were lost to corruption in the country. And I was able to hand that check over to the president on the 28th of December 2018.
Of course, you know that officials of the former government think that the work of your commission is a witch hunt against former officials, particularly the former government led by President Ernest Bai Koroma.
How can it be witch hunt when we are bringing out the evidence to the people? Everybody who we have invited at the ACC, we have been able to show to them what exactly we are investigating them about. The commission which I lead does not look at what political party you belong. It does not look at who you are. It looks at the facts and evidence against you. So everyone we invite, whether it's you, whether it's your supporters or anybody who are with you, we are ready to show to the country and to the people why we are inviting you. How can that be witch hunt? If they are challenging the evidence we are bringing, we will not be recovering the monies we are recovering. If there are no evidence, we will not be having the convictions that we are having. If there is no evidence, we will be foolhardy for us to be charging them to court. So I can't see how anything that is based on evidence can be a witch hunt. I think it is a distraction mechanism. It is a way of trying to throw a wet blanket on what we are doing for the people of Sierra Leone and for the country, and we are not listening to that.
So what's next for your commission in 2019?
In 2019, It is very simple. We make sure that corruption becomes a very risky and pricey enterprise. We are going to increase the price of corruption for those who wish to engage in it. So we are going to strengthen the punishments under our laws. We are going to strengthen the powers of the Anti-Corruption Commission. We are going to make sure we deepen recovery for the country. We are going to make sure that he who engages in corruption either goes to prison or becomes bankrupt. So it is going to even be a deeper and stronger fight against corruption in 2019. I have been telling them that what they have seen in the past 6 months was merely the preface. We are now entering into chapter one.
Francis Ben Kaifala is the head of Sierra Leone's Anti-Corruption Commission. He was speaking with me from the capital of Freetown. Today's Wednesday, January 9th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Botti in Washington. Daybreak Africa time is now 16 minutes past the hour. Labor unions throughout Nigeria took to the streets yesterday, Tuesday, to demand a minimum wage of 30,000 naira per month. The federal government had agreed to nearly double the minimum wage, but some states claim they could not afford to pay for it. The protesters want President Muhammadu Buhari's government to send the draft bill on the 30,000 naira national minimum wage to the National Assembly to legislate into law. Kasim Akirinti reports from Lagos.
The national protests by the Nigerian labor unions over non-payment of 30,000 naira minimum wage have been successful. Labor leaders gathered across the country to deliver messages with solidarity chorus. Comrade Tunde Aremu is the coordinator Joint Action Front, a labor activist in Nigeria. He says the protests are justified.
It's going to be a declaration of street demonstration of street activities until the minimum wage battle is over.
How does an average Nigerian worker feel about the ongoing struggles for a new minimum wage?
If we are talking about living wage now, we are talking about survival. We are talking about being able to keep yourself alive. So we need the minimum wage so that people can at least feel be relieved of the hardship that we have in Nigeria.
Workers are dying in Nigeria. We need new minimum wage. Our children can't go to school. Prices of food are high. House rent on the increase. Nigeria workers must survive.
In the words of an economist, Dr. Yekin Abib, the impact of inflation has greatly eroded the gains of the proposed new minimum wage. But other options for welfare of workers should be explored.
They should review and be looking for how can they have higher purchasing power. You know the cost of rice. Let's say a cost of production. Say, for example, a bag of rice is produced for 4,000 naira. Government can now make a bag of rice available to workers at 5,000 naira.
Labor union leaders are confident that if the new minimum wage issues are not resolved, this may affect the general elections in Nigeria. Kazim Akinrete reporting for VOA News, Lagos, Nigeria.
Burundians have expressed mixed reactions over the government's move to make students aged 16 and above to financially contribute to the country's 2020 general elections. This comes after donors suspended direct aid to the Burundian government since 2015. Moses Javier Rimana reports from Bujumbura.
In 2017, the Burundian government called on citizens to voluntarily contribute to the 2020 general elections after key donors, European Union and the United States, suspended direct aid to Burundi. The donors cited human rights violations in the country since 2015 when protests erupted against the President Pierre Nkurunziza's move to run for a third term. Now, the Burundian government says that students of 16 years and older should contribute 7 cents every year towards the 2020 elections. President Nkurunziza says it is mandatory for students aged 16 to contribute.
Vyo gutegura amatora yo mu mwaka wa 2020 uwo mugambi.
He says, about preparations of the 2020 elections, the program is being happily responded by many citizens without any problem. He says that no student can fail to contribute since it is very little money. In 2017, the Burundian government initiated a mechanism to collect funds for the 2020 general elections from citizens. The government said the contribution was a voluntary gesture. Ayuba Bigirimana is a Burundian citizen.
This is something unusual, a 16-year-old to pay for election. The 16-year-old, we understand they cannot contribute. It's a money that comes from their parents.
One of the parents in Bujumbura who preferred not to disclose his name said that the government's decision will affect students psychologically.
It's something which is not good for them because they're still young. And this can stay in their minds. Why should we pay? This is a problem that will affect them psychologically. The government should find another way to collect that money.
Tansia Siwomana is an opposition leader in Burundi.
It is a critical decision of a government to oblige the children to contribute for 2020 elections. The children have no means in order to contribute for anything. Their families have to contribute. And when they contribute, it means that they contribute for all their children.
According to the Burundian finance minister, the 2020 election budget is estimated at $38 million. After successfully financing last year's referendum, the Burundian government believes that it is a civil obligation for every citizen to contribute to next year's elections, a decision which is not welcomed by all citizens. Moses Havyarimana, VOA Africa, Bujumbura.
In rural Malawi, families send girls as young as 12 years of age for initiation, a traditional practice that marks a child's entry into adulthood. But child rights campaigners say the ritual entices young girls into early sex, marriage, and teenage pregnancy, forcing many to drop out of school. Lamek Masina reports from Mulanje.
Madalitso Makosa was 13 years old when she underwent a traditional Malawian initiation ritual to become an adult. She says after the initiation ceremony, the counselors advised her to perform a kusasa fumbi or removing dust ritual with a man of my choice. She chose to sleep with her former boyfriend, but unfortunately, she became pregnant. Removing the dust refers to a girl losing her virginity, often without protection, to become an adult. Those who become teenage mothers pay the price for this tradition. Makosa says when she discovered she was pregnant, she was devastated because she had to drop out of school. She is now struggling to get support to take care of her baby. During the initiation, counselors show how they prepare girls for marriage and for sex. Agnes Matemba is an initiation counselor. She says she gives girls these lessons so that they should keep their man and prevent him from going out to look for another woman. Child rights campaigners say the initiation ritual fuels Malawi's high rate of child marriage. Half of the girls here marry before age 18. Malawian group YouthNet and Counseling, UNECO, wants to keep girls in school with a more age-appropriate initiation ritual. Mark Benning Kandawire is UNECO's executive director.
That's a traditional cultural thing that people believe in, and it would be very difficult to just say, let's end initiation ceremonies. But what we're saying is, can we package the curriculum in such a way that the young people are accessing the correct curriculum at the correct time.
UNECO is working with the initiation counselors and traditional leaders to tone down Malawi's initiations. Already, some areas are banning the practice of encouraging sex after the ceremony. To further discourage teenage pregnancy, traditional leaders like Chikumbu are dividing girls' initiation rituals into two camps. One is a simple ceremony for teenage girls like Makosa, while the other provides some sex education for older girls who are preparing to marry. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Mulanje.
It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Wednesday morning to you, Samson.
Le meilleur joueur de l'année 2018, Mohamed Salah.
Mohamed Salah, African player of the year.
Merci beaucoup. Mohamed Salah.
That was how Egypt striker Mohamed Salah was announced as the African Footballer of the Year for the second successive year at the Confederation of Africa Football's awards ceremony in Dakar on Tuesday night. Mohamed Salah beat fellow nominees Liverpool teammate Sadio Mane and Arsenal forward Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang, same as in 2017 awards where he edged past the same two players in the vote decided by the technical directors and head coaches of the 56 CAF member associations. Mohamed Salah netted 44 goals in all competitions for Liverpool last season. In his acceptance speech, the 26-year-old Egyptian said he had dreamt of the award since he was a child.
I always say this award for me is very big. I love it because I saw it when I was young. I had a dream to win it one day. So now I won it twice and I'm very proud to win it twice.
In the women's category, South Africa Christiana Timbe-Katlana was voted Women's Player of the Year, while the Female Coach of the Year went to Bayana South African coach Destry Ellis, while Nigerian national team, the Super Falcons, were crowned the Women's Football Team of the Year. Christiana Timbe-Katlana's second award of the night was for the Goal of the Year, which she dedicated to South African girls.
I'm truly honored and privileged to have to receive this award on this beautiful wall full of legend. And I would like to dedicate this award to every female player in South Africa and all the girls who want to become champions. This is for you.
Other awards of the night include the Men's Coach of the Year, which was won by Hervé Renard of Morocco. Men's National Team of the Year went to Mauritania, while Ashraf Hakimi of Morocco, who plays for Borussia Dortmund in Germany, was named Youth Player of the Year. Highlight of Tuesday's awards were the recognition given to 12 African football legends, amongst whom are the likes of George Weah, Kanu Nwankwo, Patrice Mboma, Frederick Kanute, Rashidi Yekini, Victor Peba, among others. Liberian President and former World and African Footballer of the Year, George Weah, spoke of how much he missed playing football shortly before he was recognized as one of the legends of the game.
You will never not miss sports. It's the best thing that ever happened in my life. So I miss it. And I admire the young guys and our stars today. But I miss it a lot.
There were lots of music at the ceremony, with one of Senegal's biggest music export, Youssou N'Dour, thrilling guests with some of his biggest hits. FIFA President Gianni Infantino was amongst guests who presented some awards to the recipients at the ceremony. Earlier in the day, CAF Executive Committee announced that Egypt will host the 2019 African Cup of Nations. Egypt beat South Africa, the only nation to beat by 16 votes to one with one abstention. Samson Omale, VOA Daybreak Africa Sports, Abuja, Nigeria.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good day. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of African news. Labor unions throughout Nigeria took to the streets yesterday, Tuesday, to demand a minimum wage of 30,000 naira per month. The protesters want President Muhammadu Buhari's government to send the draft bill on the 30,000 naira national minimum wage to the National Assembly to legislate into law. And that is it for this Wednesday, January 9th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson Omale, along with all of our engineers, I'm James Barty in Washington saying, have a very good Wednesday, Africa.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
Anger over rising prices, shortages of bread and fuel, and a cash crisis has incited demonstrations across Sudan and against President Omar al-Bashir. Is Sudan in the precipice of change? An in-depth discussion on the politics of Sudan on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
The 2019 Voice of America calendars are in. This year's calendar features a variety of scenic photos that capture the beautiful byways of the United States, including magnificent photos of California's Big Sur Coast Highway, West Virginia's Highland Scenic Highway, and even the Cato All-American Road in Maine. Tune into Border Crossings and call to request a free calendar.